Your people will be wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Your people will be willing, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you grasp this, and also not remove your hand from the other. For he who fears God will escape them all. Wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city. For there is a just man, for there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Also, do not take heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times, also, your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. All this I have proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. As for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? I applied my heart to know, to search and seek out wisdom in the reason of things, to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and men, whose hands are fettered. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her. Here is what I have found, says the teacher, adding one thing to the other to find out the reason, which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. Truly, this only I have found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes.
Amen. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Well, here we go, and about wisdom last week, carrying on about what Solomon thinks about wisdom. And you'll start off with verse 15 here. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. And does being a righteous person guarantee you against anything bad happening to you? Do bad things happen to good people?
Yep.
Do good things happen to bad people?
Yes.
So, right? Jeremiah wrote about the same thing in chapter 12. Righteous you are, O Lord, when I plead with you, yet let me talk with you about your judgments. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why are those happy who deal so treacherously? It's something to think about, isn't it? How do we respond to that when you see a righteous person and bad things happen to them? You know, we pray about it. I think some really godly people, Wednesdays, Sundays, every day of the week, right? How do we respond to that when bad things happen to, as best as we know, good people? What do you think, Patty?
Sometimes it gives us wisdom, because my husband had polio, and he gave him a desire to help people that needed to learn to walk. Yeah. Sometimes we go through valleys in our life we don't understand. But that very valley that God puts us through is the very valley that we learn to help others.
Does it remind you of a book in the Bible about someone who suffered, who was righteous and suffered and didn't understand why he suffered? And then when the Lord confronted him and they talked, he understood that he shouldn't question God. Who was that man? Yeah. Probably, again, one of the greatest books in the Bible. Because think about Job. Had he done anything objectively wrong when we read about him? No. I mean, he even prayed over his children and made offerings and sacrifices because he was worried that maybe they had done something wrong. Pretty righteous man, would you say, in the Bible. And yet, what happened to him? And we know... I always think a lot about, maybe you do too, about the people at 9/11, you know, the World Trade Center. I think I've probably shared with you before, when I worked for Morgan Stanley, I trained there. I was in the Twin Towers. I've been there. Not obviously September 11, 2001, but I was there. Those people went to work. I'm sure many of them were godly and good people. Had they done anything wrong? But yet, so what would you, I'll pick on my one of my favorite pastors, Pastor John. What do you think? How do we trust in the Lord's sovereignty when things like that happen?
Well, I hope we do. So that's our one recourse. You know, Peter says, do not be surprised when the trial comes upon you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're all surprised because we're not used to it.
Yeah, Yeah.
But if you look at the Bible, like pretty much every righteous person suffered, to include Jesus. I don't think there were many people in the Bible who loved God, followed God, and had an easy life. Old Testament, New Testament, it's filled with suffering saints.
Sure. Well, you know, even David, a man after God's own heart, sinned greatly and suffered because of that sin.
Even before he said,
yes.
All
the time there, yeah. Sure. And David could have killed Saul, and he did on two occasions. So, yeah, I think this is just my take. Maybe I'm wrong. I think, especially Americans, we somehow don't equate suffering, right? We don't think that we should suffer, do we? I'm just saying as a whole. Because we've not suffered, really, have we ever suffered persecution as Americans in the church in this country?
Yeah, I mean, in the past, as Baptists, we were thrown in jail.
Sure, sure. But I'm saying that if you look at the whole sweep of American history, I'd say the last 50 to 100 years, has Christianity really been persecuted in this country at all?
During COVID.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, we've suffered a lot less, and you know, you've heard John speak before about being in Turkey, for example. You know, a Christian there, you can be ostracized from your family. You know, seems like every day you'll read something happens, like in India recently, two men, they were assaulted, beaten by a Hindu mob, and they were charged with disturbing the peace. The Christian men that got beaten by the mob, they were charged. So I think we shouldn't be shocked when Christians suffer, I don't think. I mean, it's not unexpected, I think, because we live in a fallen, sinful world. Our bodies are corrupt. They're not made, you know, even if you have a Michelin body, it's only good for 100,000 miles. I mean, you're going to wear out. I mean, it just happens. And so we are going to suffer. So, you know, I think Solomon crying out, as he sees things, he sees, you know, righteous people suffer. And unrighteous people prosper. And you know, the Bible has unrighteous people prospering too for a season. Ahab, the most wicked king in the northern kingdom of Israel, he seemed to have a pretty good life till the end. But, of course, he paid for that at the end. But what does he say? He regards that, and he jumps into verses 16 and 17. Do not be overly righteous, nor overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Do not be overly wicked, or be foolish. Why should you die before your time? Is he counseling just to be a kind of a tiny bit of a sinner, just sin a little bit, you know? And you know, don't be a big sinner, just be a little sinner, or don't be, you know, don't be real, don't be an Albert Einstein, be kind of like, you know, a little bit dumb. What's he saying in those verses there, do you think? You think he's talking about extremes, perhaps? Can, as a Christian, can you become legalistic? How, Karen?
Oh, yeah.
How could a Christian become legalistic?
Well, if you come in ways that you're supposed to dress, I remember being in legalistic churches where if you wore pants, you were ostracized, you know.
Right.
Or your hair length was too long. They don't like that.
Sure. What about, can you think that you're smarter than the average bear? Mm-hmm. Quote, right?
There are people that think they have more Bible knowledge. Not necessarily are they righteous, they just have more Bible knowledge.
Right. Pastor Bill, you shared with us before sometime in your earlier church. Did you feel during those times, looking back, do you think it was somewhat legalistic? Churches you were part of early in your walk?
If we're defining it as believing that you're saved because you keep certain Bible commands, I didn't go to any churches like that. If you're talking legalism, means that you feel like your spirituality is summed up in whether or not you're keeping some external standards. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really quick way to feel godly suddenly is if you're feeling like you have a deficit in your walk with God, you can feel better about yourself in a hurry if you're keeping some rules.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quick way to recover from feelings of distance with God is, but you know, I do all the right stuff. So if that's what you mean by legalism, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I
whether
think...
Whether or not you keep the right version of the Bible, whether you sing out of the hardback book versus looking up on the screens, whether you wear a white shirt with a tie instead of preaching with just the jacket on, whether you have screens at all. I mean, the opportunities are endless for people to feel better about themselves through action.
You're right. And I think Solomon here is talking about, you know, do you become extreme over here, you know, with wisdom and legalism? Do you value your head knowledge more than anything else? Or I'm better. It reminds me of in the Gospel of Luke, right? I tithe all that I give. I'm better than that tax collector. The tax collector's beating on the chest, forgive me, Lord, the sinner that I am, right? Who's judged more righteous? The man who confesses who he was. But he's not also saying, be a little bit wicked, be a little bit of a sinner, right? I mean, a little bit of sin in your life. What's going to happen if you sinned a little bit in your life?
It's probably going to increase. I mean, we're not terribly satisfied with little amounts of sin.
No.
I think as I'm sitting here staring at these verses, sometimes I think that they make more sense if I stare at them endlessly. But, you know, verse 18 appears, I know you haven't read it yet, but that it looks like it puts the overly righteous of verse 16 and the overly wicked of verse 17, the overly wise of verse 16, it looks like it puts them all on the opposite of the one who fears God. I see that in verse 18, the
yes.
one who fears God will escape them all. So
yeah.
I'm with you. I don't think that this is a righteous like right doings.
Right.
I don't think it's wise like godly wisdom. I think we're dealing here with false types of both because they're contrasted with the one who fears God in verse 18.
Yes. Right. And one author wrote this, a comment. He said Solomon's not saying, he's not counseling that sin in moderation is acceptable. He's saying that some sin in everyone's life is inevitable. Those who embrace evil as a way of life are destroyed by it. Isn't that true? People that embrace. If they're not judged in our time, we know ultimately who the judge is going to be. You know, if good things happen to bad people, we know that they'll pay for it, don't we? I don't know if we should take comfort for it because we know they're going to be punished for it, though. But there are bad people that get away with everything, isn't there? They live this great life, and so yes. And I think, thank you, Pastor. As we jump into verse 18, let's listen to verse 18 for a second here. It is good that you grasp this, and also not remove your hand from the other, for he who fears God will escape them. Michael, you shared with us before. What's the beginning of wisdom? You read.
Fear of God.
Right. The fear of the Lord, right, is the beginning of wisdom, right? Well, Proverbs 9, verse 10, Proverbs 1, 9 talks about that, but Proverbs 9, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So what would you say from, and that Solomon would have written that proverb, right? He, pretty smart man considering, but anyway, what's true knowledge then? What's the true way of knowledge, would you say?
Now, where are you talking about in these verses, the knowledge that you're describing?
Well, he says there in verse 18, for he who fears God will escape them all. Proverbs 9:10 says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Uh-huh.
So if he says don't be a, you know, don't sin a little bit, right? Because then you go to the extreme of sinning, and don't be self-righteous because that's not wise. Well, what is wisdom? Well, the fear of the Lord is wisdom.
Sure.
Gives you wisdom. So that's where I think he's going, you know, with that whole statement there in the verse there, that latter part. What should a God-fearer do? You know, is devotion to God and fear of God. And there's nothing wrong, again, how are you going to truly enjoy life? Well, the beginning of that is to fear the Lord. If that's your priority, then you're not going to go over here and become self-righteous because you know who God is, and you know that you want to do evil because you know who God is. You know, fearing and trusting and knowing who the Lord is, I believe, gives you that balance there. Because, you know, Tom, right, you can't sin a little bit, right? Right, pastors? You can't just sin a little bit because it's going to become greater and greater. You know, Paul talks about, I think, some great wisdom in Romans chapter 6. Verse 14 says, "For sin shall not have dominion over you. For you are not under the law, but under grace." I think if you remember that, you know, and that's part of fearing the Lord, of knowing who God is. Because what happens, what would you say, friends, if we don't fear God, what happens to us? If we take God lightly, what do you think?
Well, we don't value His word, and we won't pray, we won't go to church, and we'll grow further from Him.
Right. Are you saying, Michael, like if we don't have respect for who God is and fear Him and knowing that He's God and we're not, what becomes of our lives, would you say? What becomes of our lives? We don't fear the Lord, you know. Huh?
We destroy ourselves. Really.
Yeah. Would you say that's true? You destroy yourself?
Yeah, we sin leads to death.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you say someone, so what you're saying then is that someone that doesn't fear the Lord, his or her life's going to be wrong, isn't it? It's going to be worthless, essentially, at the end. Whether they become legalistic or whether they become, you know, dissolute, you know, without that right balance in your life, it becomes bad, doesn't it? Yeah, we'd think, but what do you mean? If I'm legalistic and I obey every single thing that I think God tells me, I'm not going to be righteous. Right? Or if I just, you know, because we can understand, right? Oh, if I do all these crazy sins, I'm going to be punished for that if you believed in who the Lord is, right? But you would think someone that's very legalistic that, well, I'm better than everybody else. Look, I do all this stuff too. I dress a certain way. I act a certain way. I talk a certain way. But, I think Solomon, again, I believe he's talking about a balance in there. You know, don't be a sinner, obviously, but don't be so self-righteous.
Well, ultimately, it's to our own detriment as human beings in the image of God to not properly fear God. Because if we don't fear God, Romans 1 is clear on this. We will start debasing images of God. And so we bring God down to the image of the created beings. And then it says that we debase the image of the created being into a creature like a four-footed beast or a creeping thing.
Yeah.
So if it's not to our human flourishing to think less of God, to fear God less, because ultimately it's debasing to us, because we're created to communicate with God. And if we think less of Him, we're bringing both He and His image down if we
don't
fear Him.
And, you know, Pastor, you're right, because, you know, people...
We act like animals.
My wife was watching a show the other evening about this very primitive tribe in the Philippines that they hunt everything on four legs, right, to eat. And, you know, you've perhaps seen it many years ago. They had the Philippines has about 7,000 islands in there, and a lot of them have, you know, never really been explored even. Many, many years ago, they found an island in the Philippines, and they studied the culture there. And this island, they had something they worshipped. They made something that they worshipped. And I guess the point was the universality of that desire in our hearts to worship something greater than us, isn't there? So if we worship, Pastor, your point is well taken. If God is debased, if God is, you know, Jesus is my homeboy, I understand the sentiment behind that, but then you're trying to make, God equal to us, and we're not. And if we don't fear God, would you agree that that's what can happen to us? And then it becomes, you know, I'll be a faithful church member and show up to church once a month. I'll be a faithful church member and show up once a year. I just decide not to go because Jesus knows my heart. And then before you know it, you've debased God and you've made Him us, you know, instead of God making us in his image, we try to make God in our image. Pretty foolish, isn't it? Very foolish.
Well, it's not good for us. I mean, there was a time in the 1400s and 1500s, Desiderius Erasmus specifically, he was called a humanist. And back then, humanist meant something much different. Now it means someone who's usually an atheist.
Yes.
And they think that human beings should be, or humanity should be worshipped without God. And that just leads to, again, debasement. All kinds of wicked, nasty stuff that isn't good for us and makes us look really sorry. Yeah. But the humanists of the 1400s and 1500s had such a high view of God that a humanist was someone who had a proper view of humanity. That if we're made in the image of this high and holy creator, then what are we capable of doing? And it was a God-fearing exaltation of humanity.
Yes.
And you treated human beings much better because you had a high view of the God in whose image they were created.
Sure.
And so that's when the arts flourished. That's when people started being able to read.
The Reformation.
That's when science was, I mean, basically everything we call modern science now, if it can be traced to the scientific method, was developed in that era.
Sure.
Because we had a high view of God.
And theology was considered the queen of science at that time.
That's right.
And that's amazing. Now it's like, well, you know, it's nothing. You know, instead of giving God the glory, you know, we give human beings the glory. That's what you're right. And the ultimate in that, all you have to see in our own time, you look at anything with the isms at the end, communism, Nazism, socialism, who do they give glory to? Us.
Yeah.
You know, us. They don't give any glory to God. I mean, and they're all, you know, what's the premise of all those isms? They're all atheistic. You know, they don't serve the living God there. So I think obviously Solomon's point is well taken, isn't it? Not to be legalistic, but not obviously not to be a sinner, but to fear who the Lord is. And I think that ties in with the next couple of verses, 19 and 20.
Before you go on, can I point it out real quick?
Sure.
This is beautiful. I love his use of hands. Verse 18. It is good that you grasp this and do not remove your hand from the other. So with one hand, you're grasping something. And the other, you're almost keeping it at bay, like a stiff arm. And the thing that you're grasping is the fact that you're not supposed to live a wicked life, and you're not supposed to be foolish. You know, why should you die before your time? Grasp that. But at the same time, it's important that you not be overly wise or overly righteous, and that you shouldn't presume upon your own righteousness, like Proverbs 3:7 says, don't be wise in your own eyes. Mm-hmm. But I just love this, like, it's almost like you're holding in tension, you know, what God calls you to do.
It's a good analogy there, yeah, the grasping and like
yeah,
that.
Like
yes.
There's a
very
tension,
good.
Like
yes.
Push-pull.
Right. Very good. And I think, you know, all these verses tie in. Let's look at 19 and 20 as we go on. It says, wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city, for there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Well, that's right out of Rome. I mean, the last verse 20 is right out of Romans 3:23. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. It doesn't seem that. How does verse 19 and 20 go together? It didn't seem like they would do that, but, you know, you need wise people in societies because why? Because as Romans 3:23 says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So you need, you know, wise men. You need, you know, rulers that can try to prevent evil, sometimes by force, right, to prevent evil. But, you know, people are people. If they've all sinned, people can be petty. They're weak. They're ambitious. It takes wise leaders to have an equilibrium, doesn't it? It takes wise men. What happens to a society when it's not ruled by wise people?
They have like $30 trillion in debt. they get involved in wars they can't afford. Yeah. I mean, if that were to happen.
Right. I could say you could see you.
With senility in the White House.
Or like the Romans, they got sacked by barbarians. You know?
Sure. Well, the Romans, what happened to Rome, one of many things was the fact that the people in the Roman Republic, for the old Roman Republic, Romans, they wouldn't fight for their country anymore. So they hired barbarians, right, to be in their legions. And and they looked around and said, well, wait a minute. We can take this city. Why am I fighting for a little chump change here? I can go and conquer the whole city. They wouldn't do their duty anymore. $30 trillion in debt. And the thing you can do is just go out and raise your credit limit all the time. Of course, you won't be around to pay when the bill comes due. Bad leaders produce bad results, don't they? We can look in our own country's history. The presidents that happened before the Civil War were among the most mediocre presidents this country ever had. If you go back and look at, Millard Fillmore, for example, he was never a great. James Buchanan, they were bad presidents, that didn't help, did it? Bad leaders, if they're not wise, can we see that today? What happens with bad leaders? And I'm starting at the local level on up. What happens if you have a bad city council in your city? It's going to happen. You get tacked.
And it works the other way. We have a church member who has been elected to county school board.
Yes.
And she came to see me the other day and said, okay, so we're considering beginning all city school board meetings with prayer. And what do you think? How do you think we should go about that? Well, that's the first time in a long time that's happened. We're talking about a public school board,
right?
And they're talking about, like, how do we get about so we don't have a Wiccan leading in prayer? How do we go? I mean, so that happened this week. So it can happen both ways.
Praise God! Yeah.
You know, if you put a righteous person in charge,
sure.
You know, the people rejoice, is what the proverb says.
Well, and we have been blessed in this country when we've had a couple. At least in my own lifetime, a couple mediocre leaders. We've been blessed with some good presidents that seem to follow them sometimes. But you know, the longer you get a string of bad leaders, and we would say ungodly leaders, what's going to happen? You're going to have, why is this happening to the United States of America, right? Well, I wonder why. You know, we're arguing about genders if people don't know what gender they are, for example. I mean, that's fairly obvious what you are. And if you don't know, that used to be, Walter, did that used to be considered a mental illness if you weren't sure what gender you were at one time?
Oh, no.
I mean, you'd go, they'd put on the jacket that ties in the back and get you some help, right? but think what we've done now. I mean, we waste time arguing about, that sort of a thing. That's where you've had, because don't you think you've had poor leaders that have allowed that to come into public discourse? And say, I mean, is that true? Is that an example?
We've had poor leaders, but you've also had uninvolved people.
That's right.
Yeah.
We haven't really cared what happened at the school board. We haven't really cared what happened at the county commissioners meeting because nobody goes. There might be 5 or 6 people there listening.
Right. No, you're right. And, doesn't it drive you crazy? Oh, I hate the way that this country is going or whatever. And you ask them, well, have you voted? Well, no, I don't vote. Well, I mean, I understand you're not happy about it, a Christian man and woman, well, I don't want to get involved in politics. Is this a dirty business? Well, yeah, but if you get involved, maybe you could clean it up. That's a great example, Joan. Yeah, people don't show up for stuff, and then they get mad at the results, right? Is that very wise? What do you think Solomon would praise that kind of wisdom? Do you think that's godly wisdom?
Ungodly things start to happen when you start taking God out of things.
Yeah.
You see more sin. You see more dreads.
Sure.
You see all this kind of pious. The more that they take God out of things.
Yeah.
When our Ten Commandments are taken down in places that gives people wisdom. That's wisdom.
Yeah.
And they're taking it away.
Didn't they used to have a song? They still probably don't sing anymore. God Bless America. They sang it during World War II, I guess. They've forgotten about that, huh? You know? I've probably said it a few too many times, but again, when we lived in Hawaii, outside of our window, he saw the Arizona blasted, and then right behind it, USS Missouri, So less than 4 years later, we were, you know, December 7th, we were defeated. All the battleships sunk, beached, you know, 4,000 lives almost lost. 4 years later, you know, you can go right to the Missouri. You can stand on the deck where the Japanese representatives came and signed the surrender documents, you know. And we remembered God in those times, huh? A lot of people were praying, and seemed like they were wise. Seems like we've gotten more sophisticated. We got more dumber, huh? Maybe.
You know, you talk about evil, but that's just like out in California. You know, places where that a lot of filthy movies are made, and even games for children to play, and they had to take a lot of them off the other day because of things in them that's bad that children didn't see. And then you hear of all of this snow coming in California. All these fires and floods.
Well, you know, but that about being wise, you know, is parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and aunties and uncles, you know. You give a kid something like this, you know, this, and I know present company accepted, but do you look at what they watch? You know, what are they consuming? I mean, do you allow them just to, here you go, man, hit the internet, Bubba, and just whatever pops up, you can see it. You know, wisdom. You know,
I think one of the great things about this verse is 19:20 specifically is that it refers to what are you consulting. In the first verse, wisdom strengthens the wise. More than 10 rulers of the city. So imagine you belong to a city and there are 10 rulers in that city. And they're passing down great things that they think will do well for the city. Do this, do this, do that. Now, the next verse says, there isn't a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. So even if you've got good rulers, even if you know, some of those rulers are good rulers, you know, ultimately, everyone born on the planet is a sinner.
Yep.
And I think we make the mistake of simply consulting the rulers of our city and not asking God, what's wise here, you know?
Yeah.
And but I think, like, it's a cool exhortation. Like, hey, if you want to be wise or you want to have strength, you know, if you want to, wisdom actually strengthens the wise, so pursue wisdom.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not going to all of a sudden get rid of our rulers because our rulers are our rulers. And I think verse 20 does a great job of just simply saying, hey, even if you got good rulers, guess what? They're still sinners.
Even the president of this country that you might like the most is a sinner. Mm-hmm. You know, even the, and I don't care what name you fill in the blank, whoever your favorite president was, that man is a sinner, right? And even the best ruler, yep.
My Bible link, my Bible link refers to Psalms 127, verse 1, and this is called a Song of Ascents of Solomon. So, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it.
Yep.
Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain.
Yep. Well, back to true wisdom is what Jordan was saying, is godly wisdom is the true wisdom. You know, you need that sort of a wisdom to balance things out there, right? Well, then these next two verses are really interesting. We'll probably spend a minute or two talking about them. Also, it says in verse 21, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times also, your own heart is known that even you have cursed others. Yikes. What about that? You know, does it remind you something? Huh? Go ahead, Pastor.
I was going to say, I thought you were asking. It seems like it's a warning against doing too many surveys. I mean, yeah.
What's the climate in the church, right? I first read that, I was thinking, and it for me what came to mind was in the Sermon on the Mount out of Matthew 7, verses 3 through 5, where it says, and why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove that speck from your eye and look, a plank in your own eye? Hypocrite. First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. You know, Jordan, I'm glad you mentioned that. People have sinned. All are sinners, right? We tell all sinners fall short of the glory of God. You know, you're going to have to deal. Don't you think in this world we have to deal with people the way they are? I mean, this is the person in front of you, correct? This is the way they are. They're a sinner. Hopefully they're saved by grace, and sometimes they're not. But we have to deal with these people, don't we?
In some measure.
Yeah. You know, take to heart, people say, everything you say, lest you hear your servant cursing you, right? What do you think he means there? Let your servant hear cursing you.
I think, like I said, don't desire too badly to know what people are saying about you. You might not like what you hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also implying that sometimes you're going to hear it.
Yeah.
You're just going to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then,
you hear someone spreading gossip.
Yeah.
I mean, we all do that. We all hear that sometimes. We hear someone talking about us.
Mm.
And this is like, hey, so what?
Right.
Don't take it to heart.
Right.
But I also think that, you know, if you hear some, you know, don't ask everyone what they think about you or think about the situation, because you would, you know, you don't want to hear that. But then it's also that verse 22 is talking, I think, about how even our own opinion is considered in that cursing. So we're talking about an opinion of other being cursing, and our opinion, or the way our heart naturally goes toward things, is, you know, is cursing. I mean, I think it means like saying a bad word. I think it's talking about talking evil. So not only we listen, we ask somebody their opinion, and it's going to be something that we don't want to hear, or that's not edifying, but our own heart does that also.
That's right. That's a good point, Nikki, because, you know, not only do people not say good things about you, but think about it from the, honestly, haven't you said something about somebody before? Everyone ought to be nodding their head. I mean, you've said, like, you know, yeah, that's so-and-so, you know, and I heard about so-and-so, and they shouldn't be doing that. We've said that sort of stuff. So you're right. We've not necessarily called them a foul name, but, you know, you've heard something. Oh, yeah, I know that person's like that. Isn't that, you know, when you hear something bad about you, haven't you said something bad about somebody else perhaps in your life?
Is this a thick skin verse? Like, you should have a little bit of thick skin.
Well,
I need this verse because I'm a people pleaser. Yeah. I want to know that I'm making everyone happy. And this verse is basically saying, you know, there's got to be some limits to how much you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think in anyone in pastoral ministry, you don't go off starting to make people angry at you. I think if you don't intentionally go, I'm going to make everyone in the church mad today. I don't think, yeah. But I think, you know, a good point. You know,
don't take it to heart. Is like,
don't, yeah,
have a little bit of thick skin. Like,
sure.
Yeah, everybody has an opinion.
Sure. Sure. That's true. Everyone does have an opinion. You know, they you know, one person could ever, a pastor, you know, preach, say, that's the best sermon I ever heard. The other one could say, man, that guy, he needs to go back to school because I don't think he knows what he's talking about. It'll be the same message.
And we want them to have an opinion. I mean, Sunday night, members meeting, business meeting, we had some name votes, and I loved it. Because it meant that in those votes, there was at least a handful of people that weren't sitting there neutral. You know, like,
right, just,
well, whatever, yeah. And there were some dissenting votes in just about everything that we voted on.
Yeah.
And I think that's just fantastic, because it makes sure that no one takes it personal if you have a different opinion.
What's the saying? It's nothing personal, it's just business, right? Sometimes that's the way it is, you know.
And still be spiritual.
Yes. Yeah, not like the mafia, right? You know, nothing personal, just business, right?
Business.
Yeah. But I think, Jordan, a good point about the skin thickness. You know, those of us that have wore a uniform, you were told bad things about your ethnic origin or your own origin or the way you looked, and you just kind of, okay, well, whatever. You know, that's I'll laugh. You laugh about it 20 and 30 and 40 years later at the time. You, wait a minute, why is this guy talking about me that way? But you just deal with it, right? Well, let's look at verses 23 through 25 next. And if you go on, he says, all this, or he's talking about what he's done before, I have proved by wisdom. I say, I will be wise, but it was far from me. As for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? I applied my heart to know, to search and to seek out wisdom and the reasons of things, to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. So if you remember back in chapter 1, verses 17 and 18, he talked about that, Solomon did. He said, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind, for in much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So he wants to be wise, right? Don't you think? He's wanting to be wise. But is he saying that the more you know, sometimes the sadder you can be?
Yep.
You know, the more you know? You think of, brothers and sisters, as you've grown in faith and knowledge, sometimes are you sad about the world the more that you know?
Yes.
You think that the more you know the Lord and the more you know who he is and the more you fear him, does it make you sadder about the world as a whole?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Does it break your heart, Larry, the more you know?
Yeah, I just, come on.
Yeah. I mean, we've all seen people, probably our family members, maybe ourselves, done foolish things, haven't we? You know, and you've seen people that have this great supposed head knowledge. Well, I mean, you had a perfect example. You had people that just recently, they run a bank in Silicon Valley. In fact, it was called Silicon Valley Bank, if my memory serves me right, from a few days ago. And they managed to blow up a bank, several billion dollars worth of money, or not more, because instead of banking, they were worried about having diversity. They were worried about supporting causes that, in a way, that has nothing to do with banking business. You had a lot of people on the board that knew a lot of things, but you only had one person, from what I read, on the board of directors that knew anything about banking. So that, I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering, if you run a bank and you have no one there that knows how to run a bank on this board of directors and one person, what would you think about that board of directors if that's all you knew?
Yeah. Put my money in that bank.
Well, there was a lot of people that lived in California, apparently, that did, including the governor, from what I understand, on down. And
California.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to go there. I lived there for 8 years. I'm not from there. But I'm saying, I mean, it's like Larry was saying, you know, the more godly wisdom you know, don't you think, what do you think, Jordan? The more godly wisdom you know, the more you realize that utter wisdom isn't really worth that much. What do you think?
Well, I agree with that statement, absolutely. I'm just amazed by how Solomon, the wisest man of all the earth, says, I said, I'll be wise. And then it says, but it was far from me. It's like, he said, I'm going to be the wisest, you know, I'm going to be wise. And then he found out that it's still further out, and it's still deeper. And, you know, like, he never got there, you know? Like, and so I think that we're all after a quest for wisdom, you know, whatever it is. And I don't know if we'll ever arrive, you know? In verse 24, he says, as for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? Like, I've been searching. I've been looking. I haven't found the bottom yet. And
you think Jordan, he didn't take his advice very well, did he?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he knew all this stuff, but he didn't do it. Well, we're going through the letter of James right now, and hey, Walter.
How old was Solomon when he wrote this book?
It would have been the latter part of his life, as he looks back on his life.
Well, I mean, most of us in here are over 30. I mean, a lot of us. Older you get, you know, the more you have to reflect on what you have done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Where you are now, all the screw ups you made. You know, how can I be so dumb?
Yes.
Wish I'd done better. That's just part of life. I mean, that's when you're 30 years old, you're focused on whatever you're doing, your job, your family, whatever, and then later you ain't got a job, you ain't got any family. You know, you got a lot more time to be thinking about, you know, about your life. And so that's what he's doing here. I mean, you know, he was a stinker. Back, you know, when all the women and the wives and all that stuff he had, and he wasn't following God. Well, now he's right at that point where he's starting to wake up.
Yeah.
Well, I ain't so smart after all.
That's
what happens as we get older.
Sure. Well, you know, we're going through James right now as a church. And I'm sure we'll come to these verses, but I thought they were very appropriate as if we're talking about wisdom here. James chapter 3 says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth." Okay, someone that claims they're wise. This wisdom does not descend from above. It's not godly wisdom, right? But it's earthly, sensual, listen to this, demonic, you know, the wrong kind of wisdom. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion, every evil things are there. But the wisdom that is from above, godly wisdom, is pure and peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruit, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Isn't that the right wisdom? It's funny. I'm as sure as we covered that, not to steal under any pastor's thunder over there, but I mean the letter of James is a lot like wisdom literature. It's got a lot of this is boy. I mean, Solomon could have written this. I mean, he obviously. I think James might have known a little bit about the Old Testament, more than likely. He says that. So that's the kind of wisdom. Now, ladies, you're not going to like these next three verses, but okay, I'm just going to read what the verses say. So if you get upset, don't shoot the messenger, okay? Just get mad at Solomon.
Well, good question. He throws this verse in after he's saying all this stuff.
Yes, 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 right. "And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her. Here is what I have found," says the preacher, "adding one thing to the other to find out the reason, which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found." So what's he saying? Is he condemning women? I'll let Pastor John answer that. Is he condemning women, Pastor John? I'll let you walk right in there.
Certain types of women.
Right. Kate, right. Yes, yes. Exactly. So, John, Pastor John said it. This is looking at it from a man's perspective and a man who had 1,000 wives, right? That's exactly right. It's based upon one commentator, and I agree with him, Genesis 3:16. You will try to trap your husband, but he will dominate you. So there's that, you know, married life, and I'm not saying anyone's marriage is like this, but it's like warfare sometimes. It can be, and it's supposed to be a joy, and sometimes it's not a joy. Let's just be blunt and honest. So women are trying to ensnare men, right, according to Solomon, but men are able to dominate, right, through sometimes just sheer brute physical force, right? So you've got this, it's almost like this warfare. You know, but remember, Solomon's writing as a man to men. He's looking at a masculine perspective. And there are men that are made miserable by their wives. And there's wives that are being miserable by their husbands. I mean, what's he say there in the latter part of verse 26? "He who pleases God shall escape from her." Now, is he talking about running away from getting divorced? No, but he's going to have some peaceability there, right? If he's righteous, it doesn't mean that they're never going to marry, but a righteous man will, all things being said, a godly man, if a godly man looks for a godly wife, isn't that going to be better? Would you say?
Verse 26 is super cool, and I understand the whole verse, when it says, "He who pleases God shall escape from her." Mm-hmm. The moral of the story is she does not. please God. Because it says, he who pleases God shall escape from her. So her aim in life is not to please God.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's the adulterous woman from Proverbs. Mm-hmm. 5, 6, 7.
Yep. Yes. So, ladies, it's not condemning women. It's just simply saying, unfortunately, due to the fall, this is the reality that we live in. You know, that's the reality that we live in, that you're going to have conflicts in marriages. It's just the way it is. But a godly man, if he picks a godly woman, is going to be blessed. He shouldn't have, would you agree, she shouldn't have as many conflicts as, you know, an ungodly man married to a godly woman or vice versa. There's going to be conflicts there. Let's look at verse 29 then as we end our time. It says, truly, this only I have found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. Well, God made man, Adam, right? Adam, right? Upright. He before the fall, Adam and Eve were perfect, weren't they? Because they could have lived forever. There's no reason they couldn't have. They necessarily, if they had not sinned, would anyone have gotten sick with no sin in the world? I mean, things were perfect. Well,
no weeds.
Huh?
No weeds.
No weeds, yeah. You don't have to worry about whacking weeds out in a North Carolina yard, right? But God made man perfectly, but they, us, man, have sought out what? Many schemes. You know, if you go back to Romans 3:23, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Romans, again, chapter 5, Paul tells us this. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, would we all agree? Thanks to Adam, our father, our ancestor, everyone's born a sinner, correct? Right? And death to sin, and the wages of sin is death, and thus death spread to all men because all sinned. God made man upright, Adam, but they have sought out many schemes. Hasn't man himself pursued many different ways other than the godly way? I mean, Walter, where can we start? I know you love history. You know history well, too. Where do we start? Where man has tried to pursue a man-made utopia. Has it ever worked? Even in our country, has it worked? All the things we've tried to do, has it worked? Yeah. Do we have utopia on earth here now? You know? I don't think so. I think
scheme is a cool word, too, because if you scheme something, you're trying to figure out a way to get that thing that you want, yeah. You're not going the right way.
Yeah. How can I scam, you know, someone's like, how can I scam that thing out of somebody? How can I do this out of somebody like that, right? You know, one author says, if you want a succinct statement about total depravity of man, you could read Ecclesiastes 7, verse 29, and you could see God made Adam, man, perfect, but we schemed, you know, as you said, to try to do different things in different ways, and it hasn't worked at all, right? So I'll leave us with one verse here. I think, again, written by Solomon, the man who should have known better, as Walter so aptly put out. He regretted all the things he'd done. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust the Lord with all your heart and lean on your own understanding. Isn't that true? In all your ways, acknowledge him and he shall direct your path. Isn't that the right knowledge we should have, friends? If we're looking for wisdom, isn't that the wisest thing we can do? Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all.